Soccer is just a game. The beautiful game, but still just a game. But is it? I think it's also a gateway, a door to new relationships, connections, community. On this episode of The Hammer of Sparks, we get to really explore that with a very special guest, former Canadian international and MLS star, Tesho Ekindele. Tesho has a history with Forge players, a really unique origin story, so to speak, and an eye-opening outlook on life and opportunity. As you'll see, his mindset is perfect for success on the pitch and beyond. We talk about playing for your country, how he grew as a player in unlikely places, how important it is to use your voice while you have one, and a new life after soccer. There is so much here for fans of Forge, soccer, and just people looking for community and a more fulfilling life. I know, big words for a small podcast about soccer, but I believe in them. I hope you really enjoy this special edition of the Hammer of Sparks, wider than the pitch edition. Now let's get started. Oh, and there's going to be some little secret stories about our Forge players at the end. Hope you enjoy. All right, everyone. Welcome back to the Hammer of Sparks pod, if I knew the name of my own podcast. And today I have a very special guest as we try something a little bit new. Today we're talking to Tesho Ekindele. Tesho, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Really excited to be here. You know, you're doing obviously great work with this podcast, so I'm excited to share a part of that.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. And it was fun just getting to know you a little bit and finding out all the connections you have to our hometown Forge team here in Hamilton. Talk to me a little bit about the guys that you know on the Forge team from Kyle Becker on.
Yeah, so Kyle Becker, like you said, I played with him for a little bit at FC Dallas and played with him on the Canadian national team. And, you know, there's other guys like Ashton Morgan, Manjikar, Jordan, who I played with, you know, with the Canadian national team or played against in MLS, a lot of those guys. And I mean, you guys have a lot of Canadian national team legends, I would say, especially kind of like the era before the one we're in right now. Right. A lot of those guys were, you know, like, especially like, let's say Kyle and Ashton, those are some young guys who had a lot of caps, played the Gold Cups, like big games for the Canadian national team, and kind of really in an important period for the squad. So and I think, you know, that's why you guys have seen so much success in the league in the first couple of years, is because you have guys like that who are still amazing players and also have kind of that big game experience and the leadership to bring up a lot of the younger talented guys that you also have on the team.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of amazing getting to talk to the guys, just how much everybody who's come to the team brings some kind of championship mentality or has played in big games and stuff like that. It's meant a lot for their medal on the team, for sure. All right, I want to dive in talking a little bit to you about, okay, obviously coming up, let's get started. You're born in Calgary, a Canadian mom, but your dad's Nigerian. So you had like a lot of options internationally to play, I'm sure. Was there ever thoughts of playing for the Nigerian national team?
Never for Nigerian. After my first year in the league, so I became an American citizen my first year in the league. I was like 22 years old.
Okay.
And that was 2014. Became an American citizen. So the decision more so was between the U.S. and Canada than Nigeria. I actually went to a U.S. camp before I went to a Canada camp. Right. I went to one camp. It was a great experience. But you know, my whole life, I was a Canadian citizen my whole life, born in Canada. My family's still in Canada. Right. And so I ended up choosing Canada, and really glad I did. Just got so many great experiences on the field, but also just as a person. Like, we got to travel to, I've been to every country in Central America, for example, wow, through the Canadian national team, which, you know, I mean, not many people are going on vacation to somewhere like, you know, Nicaragua, but I was able to go there and spend time there and play a game there. So I feel really blessed for just those experiences that I would not have probably got if I went a different direction.
You know what? That's an amazing point, too, because I think as soccer fans, we always think of, you know, you guys going down playing the game. It's all about the game. But there's these real life human experiences that you're having traveling all across North America, Central America, and getting to know places that the rest of us only kind of dream of.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, it's not like we're on vacation and we're going to the beach and stuff, but you know, you're driving from the airport to the hotel, or you're driving from the hotel to the practice facility. At least, you know, maybe you'll get some time to go out and explore. But even those experiences, you just kind of get a sense for what the country's like, what the cities like there are. So yeah, I think that's kind of an underrated part actually of being an athlete that people don't like. I wouldn't have, if I didn't become an athlete, I wasn't naturally the kind of person who would have traveled. Being an athlete forced me to travel, and then I kind of fell in love with it, just seeing so many different places in the world and so many ways people could live. So yeah, I like that aspect of being a soccer player.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like the connections and stuff, the things that maybe you never would have thought of by becoming an athlete kind of opens a lot of doors for you, right?
100%.
Going back to, I want to drop back a little bit to your school days because I was looking up, doing a little bit of history sleuthing and stuff and finding out about you. And I found out that you played Division II ball at a place called Colorado School of Mines. I mean, that's not normally a place that jumps out at you, but talking to players, Division II soccer experience has been really big for a lot of the players that are coming up nowadays. What was your Division II soccer experience like?
So I had a great experience, first of all. Most of my life, like from the time I was 7 onwards, I was in Colorado. And so a funny story about the School of Mines is that's where they brew. The city is called Golden, and they brew Coors beer in Golden. And
All right.
my dad used to work for the Coors factory when I was growing up. So in the summer times, when I was like 10, 11, 12, he would take me to the School of Mines for like their summer soccer camp and drop me off. He would go to work, he'd pick us up afterwards, go to school. So I had got to know the coach of the School of Mines from the time I was 10 years old. His name's Frank Kohnstein. And just growing up, I always knew him, and I was good at math, I was good at science. That school's an engineering school specifically, like that's pretty much all you can do. So it was a really natural fit for me. I had some offers at the time to go, to like California or different places like that to play D1 soccer, but I really liked being in Colorado, kind of close to my family. I knew I wanted to be, well, I wanted to be an engineer at the time. It
Right.
didn't turn out that way. So yeah, so that's kind of the story of how I ended up there. And then I think I completely made the right decision. Being with Frank was great. He was an amazing coach while I was there. He was a great mentor to this day. Our team was always really good and competitive. And yeah, I just met a lot of really good friends there too. So it was a great experience for me.
Yeah, and you were nothing to sniff at there is your career there. You were like a four-time All-American while you were playing there, right?
I was, yeah. The first year I kind of surprised myself, but then, after I performed really well my freshman year, I felt like, you know what, I can do this. And that's honestly when I really started believing I could be a pro, is after my first year of college, how well it went. And then I had an inflow of all these D1 schools saying, get out of there, get out of D2, like you
Right.
can't be a pro if you're coming from D2. But again, going back to Frank, he said, you want to be a pro, I can help get you there. And he delivered. He really did get me there.
Wow, this is like a really good example of like the road less traveled here, where I mean, I think everybody thinks you have to go to the biggest name, you have to, be around rubbing shoulders with the biggest names and stuff like that, have all these kind of contacts, but you went a different route. Was that scary for you, or did it just feel natural?
It just felt natural. And I think that a lot of kids maybe try to overthink things, and they try to focus on the way things look versus the way things are actually, like they feel and how they benefit you. So even for me, honestly, I don't think I would have been as successful if I went to a big school, because I probably wouldn't have got the chance to start right away. Maybe my confidence would have been lower. I wouldn't have, but who knows what would have happened. But
Right.
instead, I was able to go to a smaller situation. I was able to start right away. I was able to play big minutes in important games, which is more important than anything. If you're on, say, UCLA, for example, which is always a great soccer school, but you never play, it doesn't matter. Like, you're not going to develop as a player. If you go to UCLA and you play, it's great. That's a good
Yeah.
decision for you. But, me, maybe I wasn't going to play at UCLA. So I went somewhere that I would play. And I think that's what's most important, is if you want to be a soccer player, you got to play soccer. Like, it doesn't matter what jersey you have on or whatever. Like, if you want to get better as a player, you got to play the game.
That's pretty basic philosophy there, but it's so true. Talking to the other Forge players that I've had the chance to interview so far, a lot of them have said the same thing, whether it's playing Division II soccer, whether it's being playing in a League One Ontario or the PLSQ in Quebec, it's getting those minutes at a lower ranked team, but you get that chance to play and be in big games for them. It kind of translates to the next level, right?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, even the Canadian Premier League now is playing its part in that, in terms of Canadian development, because so you have, like you said, League One, you have the Canadian Premier League, and then you have the MLS teams all within Canada. There's different routes players can go. Some guys might go straight academy to MLS. Some guys might go League One, Canadian Premier League, MLS, overseas. Like, who knows,
Yeah.
So I think, like, Tristan Borges, back in the day, he'd kind of gone overseas from the Canadian Premier League, maybe came back. But it just opens up another route, another avenue, which I think is extremely important when you're talking about how do we develop Canadian players to compete on the world stage like we are right now.
Fantastic. That's such a good point. And I think that's what, as fans, we absolutely love, because now we're seeing things that we like. I didn't even know about our League One Ontario team that we have in the same city until, this started to build up. So now we can see all these different pathways for our players to go. It's kind of really exciting right now.
Yeah, it's exciting for the fans and it's exciting for players and player development too.
That's amazing. All right. And I would be remiss. I love soccer team names, and I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the team that you played for very shortly in the PDL. I'm sure it's pronounced Real Colorado Foxes, but on paper it looks like Real Colorado Foxes. It sounds like a very attractive soccer team.
We're just straight up the Real Foxes. No, but it was Real Colorado Foxes. And that, I mean, that's another thing that just it's all part of the soccer system, player development. So I personally, I mean, I didn't play too many games there, and a lot of guys my age played a lot of games in the PDL. That was kind of like the thing to do. For whatever reason, I ended up not playing too many games there, but a lot of respect for Real, which is still a great club in Colorado.
Oh, very nice. And again, it speaks to your the way to get to a professional career in soccer is very varied, right? Like there's so many different ways to get there, whether it's PDL, going to a big name school, or just finding your chances wherever they may be.
Yeah, and on my whole kind of life, I've just been a big fan of following your intuition, and I think that's what maybe my advice would be to any younger players listening to this is don't follow, like, to become a pro, there is a lot of different ways to do it. Like, follow what feels right to you. Where do you feel, because confidence is key. Where do you feel confident? And those environments are what really matter. Like, if you're in a place where the coach wants you, you're doing well on the team, you feel confident, you will blossom as a player more than just trying to fit into somebody else's path,
Right, it's not a one size fit all kind of thing. It's that you got to find your own way.
100%.
All right, right on. And I mean, now moving up to your MLS career, you played for some pretty big teams. You were with FC Dallas and then on to Orlando City, and you've had some titles to your name too. You're like a U.S. Open specialist, right? Like, don't you have two U.S. Open Cups?
Yeah, two US Open Cups, both, one with Dallas and then one with Orlando. And the one with Orlando was actually my last year playing before, now I'm retired. Great kind of way to cap my career off with another trophy. But the Open Cup is special, man. Just I really loved to going to some of these, like when I was in Dallas, we'd play San Antonio a lot. I
Okay.
loved going to San Antonio with Dallas, and it's like a little bit of a smaller stadium, but it's packed, and they want it. Like the lower teams, they really get up for those games. So I loved being a part of those games where, it's like a really big game for these teams to prove I should be, I should take your job kind of thing. Like, and
Right.
they're coming with that mentality. So you got to come with the mentality like, no, you shouldn't. And it's just a battle. The fans are into it. The Open Cup is a really special tournament.
And I think one of the things that's great there too is because the United States, like Canada, is so big, you kind of got to regionalize it, right? So it's facing those kind of teams year after year. It kind of built that
Over and
rivalry up
over,
there.
yeah.
And
Yeah.
it's funny you say that. We just played our first round of the Canadian Championship, our version of, the Voyageurs Cup, our version of the US Open Cup. And we just played, Forge just played a team from Laval from that league, from now it's League One Quebec. And it's nice to see like some of the players on our team actually came from the team that we were playing. There's a brother on one of the teams, so they got to play against each other. And you're right, like you can feel these vibes. It's slowly building here. We don't have that. The smaller teams haven't gotten the chance to host as much. But we, as Forge, played against TFC for a delayed championship, and it was probably the loudest crowd I've been a part of at Tim Hortons Field. So I hear exactly what you're saying. These are special moments, right?
100% special, and just there's so many dynamics between the fans and the players and the different leagues. Like, it just adds kind of another special element, which is, something you only really find in soccer. No other sports kind of have anything similar to that. So it's pretty special for our
Yeah,
sport.
playing in a league outside a league with against other leagues, it is kind of a unique thing, right? I think we're still getting used to it here in North America.
Yeah, and trying to explain it to anybody outside the soccer world, they're like, you play for Canada and you play in this tournament and that tournament, and it's like, what's going on? Like,
Where are you
nobody
this week?
understands. Yeah, so you need to just like that's why it's good to talk to the soccer people who get it,
Yeah, I know. Trying to bring new fans into the game, it's exciting, but it's also sometimes a little bit frustrating trying to get them into games to explain to them, no, this game is like CONCACAF now, so we're international, we're playing against Central American teams and it doesn't count towards the league. And so I'm sure
The
you get it.
best way to get people into it is just, bring them to like that Voyagers Cup game when the crowd is bumping. Like, people will fall in love with the game when they have a good experience at a game, you know, like, and I think soccer is one of those sports that is best experienced in person. Watching it on TV, it could still be fun, but there's nothing like being in the supporter section and the crowd's going crazy. So that's the way to do it. Like, groundwork, get your friend to the game, drag them to the game and l show them a good time. And that's how the fans will kind of build from there.
Talk to me a little bit about that, because that's one of the things we're proud about at Forge. And I think all the CPL teams are really proud of their supporter section and the connection that they have with the players. What was the supporter section like for you in Dallas and in Orlando? And what was the connection with like between the players and the fans?
Yeah, there was good supporter sections in both teams. Interestingly, there was multiple supporters groups, which I think it seems pretty common. I feel like ideally there would be one supporters group. Maybe not. Maybe it's good to have multiple groups that can have kind of their own culture. But so, you know, both teams kind of had multiple groups that would work together to bring the atmosphere. But the supporters groups are extremely important in like setting the tone and the atmosphere in the stadiums. And, you know, like you don't have supporters groups in like an American football game or a basketball game. And so a lot of times, like basketball is a good example because the commentator sets the tone for what the crowd is. Like they'll start blaring over the speaker like defense. But in soccer, the supporters group takes that place. You know, like the supporters group says, no, we're going to this chant next. Like we can feel our team is under a little bit of pressure. Like let's raise the volume. It's a corner kick. Let's go. So I love that the supporters section, like they can kind of be the conductors of the environment in a way. Like they can conduct whether the crowd needs a break or they need to raise up or go down, or, you know, like one player you see he's struggling, pick him up, you know, like next time he gets a good pass, like cheer, go crazy for him. He's feeling good. So they play a special part in the game. And it's, again, it's something that's kind of unique to soccer culture.
Yeah, you know what? That's a really good point you bring up, because luckily I get to sit in the supporter section for Forge, and one of the things that we kind of cringe when you hear the overhead, you know, noise come on. I went to a CFL Canadian Football League game the other day, and it was just so foreign to me. I used to love going to those games, but it was so foreign to me now hearing that, you know, the defense chant and the songs come on over in between and stuff like that, where it feels a little bit more natural when you're in the supporter section. You're like, oh yeah, we need this song right now, or it's a corner, so it's time for this jam, and, you know, and
Yeah,
it's
and you guys are so involved in it. You guys get it, and you get to set the tone. Like instead of letting the commentator dictate what chant you want, and it comes like it's more organic from within the what do the people want? Like, and then we'll do what the people want, you
And
know?
it's great to hear that, like, as players, you guys can kind of feel that on the field, that you know, okay, they're picking us up, or you know, and I know you're focused on the game, but I'm sure that kind of permeates you when you're on the field.
Yeah, 100%. And then it's cool also too to see like I mean, as a player. Sometimes the crowd can feel like just a big group of people, but especially you're talking about the interaction between the supporters groups and the players. Those are the people who are coming to the autograph signings, staying after the game, all this stuff. So when you get to meet a person like face to face a few times, and then you're playing the game, you go for a corner kick and you see him in the crowd, you're like, ah, I know you, you know, I know you. So I like those moments also, especially in Orlando. I had a lot of that where I interacted a lot with the fans, and on the field, I would like see the same people who I know their name, and like you know, it was kind of a cool experience.
Yeah, that's amazing. Like, we're fortunate enough that we're only in year five of the Canadian Premier League, and we're like, after championships, we're like in a room or in a pub with the club, you know, or you know, you can see them at like events around the city, and just people know each other by name. And that's, I think that's super rare in our North American sports culture, that you can have that kind of grassroots level communication between your heroes and stars and the fans who come out to watch them.
Yeah, it's special, and you know, it makes it interesting for both groups of people, for the players and for the fans.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. All right, I want to jump switch gears a little bit. You mentioned that you'd retired from soccer, and that's very recent. You're a recently retired player. So what is life after soccer been like for you so far?
It's been great, honestly. So I retired. I moved to North Carolina. I moved to Charlotte. I got a new job. I'm working in real estate development now. So a ton of big changes within a few months, but all really positive. I think like my career was really good, and I'm like really proud of just how my career went. I played 9 years professionally. Like you said, I won a few team trophies. I had an individual accomplishments
Yeah, rookie of the year.
and
We didn't even talk about
yeah,
that.
rookie of the year in 2014. And it was so great. Like I couldn't have asked for anything more from my career, and you know, things change, and I'm ready now kind of for the next challenge. And I think being here in Charlotte and then being in real estate development is just really exciting to me. And I feel very energized for this kind of next phase of my life right now.
And I mean, I don't know, every professional athlete's career is a little bit different, but your career seems like you were really ready. Like even while you were playing, you were looking, had an eye towards the next chapter of your life, actually, with family and looking to something that you really wanted to do. And I think that speaks really strongly to how passionate you are about this next project and how excited it got me when I found you on Twitter talking about it. So I want to dive into this a little bit more. Tell me a little bit more about Camp North End to start with, and we'll go
Yeah.
from there.
So Camp North End is, I'm literally sitting here now in Camp North End. I work here. It's 76 acres of, there's office space, there's restaurants, there's artist studios, there's about to be apartments. So it's literally like a whole neighborhood that we are building, kind of a mile outside of downtown Charlotte. And it's a place, there's events here all the time. Like I said, there's restaurants, there's so much fun things to do. It's kind of, we kind of want to think of it as like the cultural gathering place of Charlotte, where all the people who are interested in soccer, interested in fashion, interested in art, can kind of have a place to come and be inside, outside, for free. You go to a restaurant, whatever it may be. So we're building something really special here. And I'm pretty lucky to be a part of the development team who is actually like building the buildings and kind of programming the space to bring this almost neighborhood to life.
Yeah, and when I was researching and I was looking at the website and the history of it, and I recommend anybody who's listening to this podcast to go check out Camp North End's website, because it was really fascinating when I was looking at it. Like it's always been the heartbeat of the area. Like it started off as like a car factory, and then when the war effort was needed, it was something there, and then the Cold War was making missiles, and then finally it was a pharmaceutical place. So it gave jobs to the community. It was like a hub, and now that we're like in a more modern time, those things like munitions and stuff maybe isn't needed, but now you guys have created kind of a new cultural center. It's
Yeah.
fascinating to me that this could go through so many different kind of life
Yeah.
cycles.
Yeah, I probably should have started there with the history. That's a good explanation. But like you're right. So it was always a hub for jobs, but it was always like privately owned and you could only go there if you had to be there. But
Right.
now we kind of broke those barriers down and are inviting everybody in. Like, of course, a lot of people work here, but if you don't work here, there's still a place, it's still a place for you to come and be, regardless of whether you work here or not, which we're really proud of. Just kind of inviting the whole neighborhood in, the whole public in, and letting them be a part of, this really special cultural place in Charlotte.
And that's massive to me too, because I think when I was reading up about you too, one of your big things that you're really proud of is affordable housing. And I think that's another way of breaking down barriers too, right? So having this place where everybody is welcome to come, whether it's just to check it out or to be a part of it in an art way or for an event, or whether you're going to work there and make it part of your daily life, it's kind of breaking down barriers. So tell me a little bit more about how breaking down barriers is important to you in your real estate life.
Yeah, so I guess I could back up a little bit and say, like, my passion for real estate comes from something called urbanism, which I describe as like build better neighborhoods, neighborhoods where you can walk to the grocery store, where you can walk to your kids to school, where you can hop on the train and get downtown if you need to, where there's just life and energy. It's one of those things where you know it when you see it. Like a lot of
Right.
times we might go on vacation to Europe, like Amsterdam, for example. My sister lives there, and I think it's a great example of how cities can and should be just full of life all the time, people outside. So my passion for real estate kind of came for making more great places where you just feel alive when you're in the city instead of maybe being stuck in your car the whole time in a traffic jam, like where you could. So I want places like that. And Camp North End is a great example of that. Like we're trying to create a place where you can just park on the outskirts, you come inside and you just get to be here with the other people who try to join you in this experience and just live, like I think a lot, it's kind of slowly over time with more internet and then COVID, people have lost some human connection. So I think building better neighborhoods, it kind of brings back hopefully that human connection. And there's a ton of other reasons why I'm passionate about it, from the environment to personal health to diversity, affordable housing, like the list goes on and on. But yeah, I'm really passionate about the ideas of urbanism, building better neighborhoods, and this project here in Camp North End is like an amazing starting point because it's kind of all of that wrapped into one.
Man, I would love to have you come to Hamilton one day just to pick your brain about that, because our city was built, you know, as an industrial city. It was basically built with like all these grid highways almost, like just to be able to get workers from the outskirts down to the factories as fast as possible, right? So very much a car culture. And we've had a lot of pushback on our LRT systems getting built and started up and stuff like that, and creating these 15-minute cities, as we call them here, where people can just get everything they need in their own little area, but also be able to get to the next spot. And they face a lot of kickback. So I'd love to see your takes on what we could do here in Hamilton.
Yeah, I think it always starts with just small changes in a positive direction, you know. And it's the same in Charlotte. Like Charlotte is a city that's very big and sprawled out, and it's kind of like, oh, I want all of Charlotte to be walkable. It's not going to happen tomorrow, you know.
Right.
So how does it happen? It happens by doing Camp North End, which is a huge project, but it's still only part of Charlotte. It happens by building a triplex somewhere instead of building a gigantic house. And it just happens slowly over time, one step at a time. And I think that is what a lot of maybe people in the urbanism community could do a little bit better is take the little wins. You know, a lot of times the little wins happen and you're moving your city kind of forward in a better direction. And people say, yeah, but it's not good enough because we're still so far away from where we want to be. I get it. You know, I want to get there too, but you got to celebrate the wins along the way. And the journey is kind of what it's all about. So, yeah, I think that's what it is with a city like Hamilton. And every city has their own unique starting places and their own unique culture of the people there. So work with that, you know, and invite the community to have some say so in how we develop and just keep pushing forwards one small win at a time. I think, you know, that's always how it goes.
I think that's fantastic advice, because we do have lots of small groups that are doing great things here. But I think you're right. Sometimes we overlook that because we're still like, yeah, but look at this problem here. It's still so big. But we didn't celebrate those little things that are way better than they used to be, right?
Yeah, I always think about it like this, like fight. I would rather be fighting for something than fighting against something. So I like to fight for and celebrate like those little wins instead of fighting against the car centricity, basically. Like I am pushing forward something instead of pushing against something. And to me, that helps me frame it. It might not work for everybody, but for me, that helps me frame things in a very positive manner where my thoughts and my messaging is always positive, pushing forward instead of like, oh no, things are so bad and we need to chip away at it. No, like look at what we did. Like we're moving forward and it's getting better. This is great, you know?
Well, that's an amazing like mix of two points that you brought up of, you know, keeping that positive of taking those little wins and fighting for something. And also that the conversation you kind of led to there of how COVID has kind of impacted us all, and that we've lost that little bit of human touch. And I think taking those little victories and celebrating them together as groups, that's going to be a massive win for us, like coming out of this pandemic.
Yeah, for sure. And you know who plays a big part of that is soccer, like supporter sections. Like if you have a supporters group, it's just a place where, of course, you guys like soccer and maybe that's what ties you together. But then you learn about someone's family and their kids and what their work, and you like get to know them as a person and just kind of connect on another level. And so all these groups like that are really important. And I think building better neighborhoods kind of sets the stage for groups like that to connect more. Because if you can kind of bring people into the cities, into more density, like that's where kind of more interactions will happen. You'll be closer to your friends instead of, oh no, it's a 30-minute drive to get to my friend's house. Maybe they're across the street or they're 2 blocks away. You're more likely to run into them. So that's one of the reasons I'm really passionate about just urbanism, but kind of bringing more people into walkable 15-minute city environments.
Yeah, you know, that's really fascinating that you bring that part up too, because I was thinking we're having this conversation at my other job, and we're having conversations about things that are kind of like how we're kind of hitting walls and how we lost senses of community even at work or in our home lives and stuff like that. And we talked about, like, for me, soccer supporters group, not to sound too over the top, but it's kind of like we used to have churches and families came together and everybody came together every Sunday, so you had this big community. And as those kind of things kind of fall by the wayside and we become more modern and less church focused and stuff like that, these kind of ways are good ways to get people out who all have a common goal, but like you said, have something else that they didn't know connected them. And you get all these human bonds kind of connecting and stuff like that. And then you find out that people are into building 15-minute cities, and you have conversations about that at the pub. I think these are massive wins for us to celebrate, I guess, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's extremely important. Like people need to feel part of a community. You know, if you just kind of go from your house to your work, back to your house, and you're alone the whole time, like it doesn't matter like how successful you are because you need to share those wins with other people and kind of life is just better done together, you know. And so I agree 100% with what you're saying.
No, I love that. And I guess that also, like, here we're talking to each other on Zoom, which is amazing that we'll be able to brought together by this technology. But at the same time, a lot of people are work from home now. And there's that whole element that if you're not living in a little community, your work from home, you know, you're not getting those connections, that can be like really lonely
Yeah,
in
you're
the
working from
modern.
home, you're ordering your groceries to your house, you're ordering your stuff from Amazon, like you don't run into people ever, you know? So
Right?
and then I think like creativity is lost, like culture is lost, passion is lost, a lot is lost without kind of these interactions with, like even right here, we're having this conversation. You know, I feel excited. I think you feel excited. Like interacting with other people, just it's just good. It jazzes you up. So
Yeah, 100%. And I love it's a good point. Like, I think this is what I love most about doing this podcast is I've been able to talk to soccer players about, of course, soccer. We love that. But it always branches out into something more human, something, you know, whether it's family, what you're going to do in the next career, coming up through school, all these kind of things that just maybe we hadn't thought of when the conversation first took off.
yeah. Which is great that you're using your platform that way. And, you know, I would kind of encourage soccer players to think of using their platform more that way. And which is something I consciously did the last 2 years of my career, is I said, okay, I want to just start telling the world like who I am as a person. Like everybody knows me as a soccer player. And I would share, like, you know, I played a good game today or the team did good today on my social media. But nobody really had a sense for who I was as a person, what I was interested in, what I was thinking. So I said, you know what? I want to start sharing who I am as a person. And that kind of led me through a path that I didn't know existed to really finding something else that I was passionate about. You know, like I wouldn't have found urbanism if I didn't first start talking about how I was interested in affordable housing and education. You know, like I started there and the world kind of shifted me towards like, have you heard about urbanism? I had not, you know. So I would encourage more athletes to take, like, of course, come on your podcast, share who you are as a person, but also athletes should use their own platforms, tell the world who you are as a person, interact with the other people who are interested in those kind of things. Like I was going out to, there's this group called Orlando YIMBY. It's Yes in My Backyard. And they were advocating for like building more housing, more dense housing. And I would go out to those meetings. You know, I'm a professional soccer player, but I would be out here just, you know, with a bunch of people who were engineers and architects and urban planners and whatever it may be. And just get out there a little bit more, and I think that would really help athletes find what's next, because sports might end when you're 25, 30, 35, but it ends and you have a lot of life left. So having something to jump right into afterwards that you're also passionate about, for me it's been really helpful.
No, that's amazing. And I think that's great advice for, of course, for professional athletes, but I think for all of us in general, like nobody's having that out of high school, go to the factory, work that for 40 years and then retire career anymore, right? You have to be open to a bunch of different things. So I think creating those sources of community and networking kind of go hand in hand, right?
Yeah, for sure. And just putting yourself out there a little bit, I was saying in the context of athletes, but everybody, you know, like go and find out, like, what are you interested? Go start going to those meetings or talk about it online and find the other people who are talking about it. And then I think the key is to bring online to real life, you know? So like, I'm a huge fan of Twitter. I love being on Twitter, but the best Twitter experiences come from bringing that into the real world where you can actually meet the person you were talking to on Twitter or whatever. And you know, like I've met a lot of people in Charlotte for the first 4 months I've been here through Twitter. Like a lot of the people that I've met who are doing really cool things in this city are just on Twitter. One of us will shoot each other a DM and we'll meet for coffee or for lunch, whatever it may be. So I love bringing those like online connections into real life.
Well, I can speak to that because it was me seeing one of your comments about urbanism that got me to comment and like a tweet, and here we are conversing and having an interview on my podcast. So I think that's r a real deal.
Yeah, and we would have never been in this situation if I wasn't talking about urbanism and if you weren't talking about podcasting and didn't have the platform. So we would have just been pretty far apart from each other and never known. But instead, like, we have that opportunity to kind of connect.
Yeah, I think it's amazing, like being able, and it's a good point you make, because I think sometimes we shun the technological side and the virtual stuff because we're like, you know what, there's too much of it and we need human interaction, but we forget that they can work hand in hand. They can marry each other so that we can talk to people that we would never have the chance to bump into in real life and kind of make real connections that way.
100%. Yeah.
Right
Agreed.
on. And so just to kind of tie things up as we run towards the end of our program, I do want to kind of bring it back a little bit to soccer, even though I really love that conversation. And I'm going to keep that in mind, that the YIMBY, yes, in my backyard, because I think we hear so much about the NIMBY. The YIMBY is a really positive thing to keep in mind. But I want to kind of go back to soccer and talking about the Forge players. Maybe give us a little bit of a story about maybe some of the players that you remember first meeting or playing with, or some kind of good memories that you have, positive moments with some of the Forge guys like Bex or Magico James, guys like that.
I'll say Kyle Becker is one of the best small-sided players I've ever played with in my life. Like, his foot skills are amazing. You guys see it every week. Left foot, right foot. This guy's got a rocket of a shot, both feet, like, so technical. So I think that, I mean, he just blew me away playing, like, practicing with him when I was at FC Dallas together. Like, just how good he was. Obviously, he's a very good soccer player in general, but small-sided especially, man. This guy is top player. So very cool. Something about Ashton, which I'm sure you guys know, but he had started a kind of coffee shop in Toronto. So just an example of an athlete doing something and like kind of showing the world who they are. So that's a good story. Manjikar, my very first cap for Canada was in a country called Dominica, which is a tiny island. That's where Manjikar's from. And so I had met him for the first time, and we were going to his home country, and so that's kind of a cool story where I had never heard of this country before, and I think a lot of people hadn't, but he was from there, and we got to play in front of, 20,000 people, and a lot of them were like his friends and family. So that was a really cool experience, I'm sure, for him, and it was cool for me, my first cap, but also just to see, this guy who I had never met before in a country I'd never been before. And yeah, so a couple stories there.
Well, thank you, because that's definitely going in the podcast when I get my chance to interview him for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And it's fantastic seeing again other sides, like with Ashton's co coffee shop, like seeing other sides of people and who they are. We had a player named Chris Nanko who played for us, and same thing. He started an amazing clothing and barbershop business and stuff like that. It's good to see guys like even in the midst of playing, they're already having an eye towards what's next or what can be possible at the same time, right?
Yeah, I think that's actually the key. It's like, what can be possible at the same time? Because when you're a soccer player, it's kind of easier to get stuff done. Like, people will pick up your phone calls like while you're a player. They'll like kind of, shift the world around to make you happy in a way. So I think, play the hand you're dealt. Like, take advantage of the time you are a soccer player. And another thing about being a soccer player is, you might go into practice at, let's say, like 8 a.m., but you're done by 1 o'clock. So you have a lot of time in the day to just, kind of grow as a person. I think like there's a lot of soccer, and that needs to be priority number one, because that's your job, and that's what's going to help you be really successful. But don't be afraid to kind of explore other aspects of yourself and just grow kind of as a person simultaneously.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's great advice for everyone. But I think for the soccer players and the future soccer players that are listening to the podcast, I think that's wonderful advice to give to them. Heschel, thanks so much for being on the show today. I learned so much. I'd love to have future conversations with you about this soccer topics and urbanism as well, and maybe just life in general. It's been a blast.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on. We were all over the place, so sorry to the guests. You guys are expecting maybe more soccer. I apologize, but thanks for the great conversation. And yeah, maybe I'll come back on some other time or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I love to have that. Thank you so much. And
Yeah.
all the best to you in your future adventures.
All right. Bye.
Thanks, man. Wow, that interview was really good, in my opinion. Tesho dropped a lot of knowledge. I really enjoyed getting a chance to speak to them about soccer, about coming up, and most importantly, about community and life at large. If I could take one takeaway from this, it would be for my listeners, get out there and join a soccer supporters group. Or better yet, start one of your own. Creating community is so important. And I hope that this little soccer podcast helps create a little bit more community out there in the world. Thanks. See you next time. The Hammer of Sparks Pod.